Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 391 of the podcast. And it's Friday, 31st of August, 2018, as I record this. So pretty exciting as we head into the final third of the year. Can you believe it? So today I'm talking about global publishing with Kinga Gentetics from Publish Drive. And we're talking about publishing in China, Google Play, and much more, as well as why a global perspective will become more important with the spread of streaming internet speeds and mobile devices in developing countries. Exciting times indeed. And I also wanted to add a note to the interview that Publish Drive have sorted out the thorny problem of Google Play's pricing issues. If you don't know, they often do flash sales and discounting that have caused issues with price matching at Amazon. But Publish Drive have an automatic update for their pricing on Google Play, so that doesn't happen, which is super, super smart, and their help team are very useful. I have been adding all my books on Publish Drive and onto Google Play in the last couple of weeks. And if you are moving onto a new platform like Play, or if you're going wide at any point, then updating all your landing pages or your book pages or your email sequences and start telling people about it. So yes, my books are now available on Play. So if you buy there or on the Android platform, you'll be able to find them. My permanently free books, Successful Self-Publishing and Stone of Fire, are both perma-free on Play as well as all the other stores. So just a few hints there. And I'll probably do a blog post at some point on selling more books on Google Play once I have worked it out myself. In publishing news this week, I think the biggest news is probably the official announcement that CreateSpace is disappearing and everyone needs to move over to KDP Print. Now, this is not exactly news. I've been talking about it for a while. A number of the self-publishing blogs and other podcasts have also been talking about it. I actually moved all my books over about a month ago. I did talk about it then. Apparently they do have a mass move mechanism, so you can wait until the deadline. But to be honest, a few of my books had issues with some of the interior stuff. I had to verify copyright. I had some cover issues, some spine issues. So if you, I would get on with it, basically. I would not wait until the final days, because I think there'll probably be a help desk rush that will be inevitable around the deadline. So expect some upheaval. But as someone who has moved over, I definitely think I am happy with it. CreateSpace was fantastic, has been for many years, but it's nice to have everything in one place and have the payments come through and the reporting, and I think that's quite good. Also, in their email, they note, as I said the last week or the week before, that essentially this will be mean that you can do ads to promote paperbacks on Amazon.com and locally print author copies in Europe, neither of which was possible before. So as I mentioned in the interview with Karen Inglis, I think this print possibility for advertising is now going to mean a lot more print sales for indie authors. And at the moment, it's only on Amazon.com, but inevitably this will move into the UK and Australia and other markets. So yeah, I think this is going to be a game changer. So watch this space. What are we? 31st of August, 2018. I think by September, 2019, you're going to see a market share of print in the US also going to indies. And that's been quite small so far, but I think with advertising, things are going to change. So definitely we'll keep an eye on that over time. What else? Yes, they have said that in the email, I'm just having a look, there are a few changes. But as I said, I would not be, don't make a big deal about this, just move your books over and move on. And I always like the, you know, I
have my ups and downs with Amazon, as do we all, but they revolutionized the world for authors. And I love at the end of the email, they say, it is still day one for independent publishing. And I definitely feel that. I still think it is day one. Why I've got Published Drive on today, why I'm so excited about Kobo Writing Life, about all of the different distributors that we have, is because this industry continues to change. And yeah, this is just another thing along the way. So yes, moving your stuff over. Staying in publishing news, there was more talk about Barnes & Noble this week. An article in the New Republic, as reported on The Passive Voice, talks about their previous CEO has sued for defamation and breach of contract, and talks about this. And of course, because of suing, that there are things filed and you actually see information on this. And the article notes that Barnes & Noble have had four CEOs in 5 years and closed stores and laid off staff, including 1,800 people in February alone. And quote, the company is struggling in every conceivable aspect of its business. Since Borders went out of business in 2011, publishers have become enormously dependent on Barnes & Noble, which for many is their second largest account after Amazon. Now, for me, this article, obviously, nobody wants more booksellers to fold. Not at all. That is definitely not the way. But the world is changing, so you have to change your business model. And I think it's good for us to remember. To me, it once again underscores the importance of multiple streams of income. And I find it quite shocking that publishers have their biggest account as Amazon, their second biggest account as Barnes & Noble. They really are dependent on some very big companies who could make a big shift and everything changes. So I think it's important to sell on multiple stores and not build your whole business on one powerful company. And I think we're going to see if Barnes & Noble does struggle more and are not bought by another company, then things are going to change again. So yeah, big shifts ahead, I think, in print publishing, both of the with indies being able to advertise to print and Barnes & Noble struggling. Very interesting year ahead. Also, I mentioned Kobo Writing Life, and they are sponsoring the podcast today. And I have an awesome blog post on how to sell more books at Kobo Writing Life on the blog today. It includes how to get access to the Kobo promotional tab, how to use pre-orders, global sales, NetGalley promotions, Overdrive, Kobo Plus, and the reporting dashboard. So as ever, just to be clear, I go direct on Amazon and Kobo Writing Life. And I also use Drafter Digital, Published Drive, and I am going to iBooks at the moment direct, but because it's not such a friendly platform, I am looking at moving my iBooks to Published Drive. So this is a really interesting time. Again, you have to choose how many different places you want to upload your books. but certainly today should give you some interesting options. So in my personal update, we have family here right now from New Zealand and Australia. We have a family wedding over here. So lots of disruption, lots of sociable stuff and lack of routine. But I did finish the draft of Valley of Dry Bones. And then I had this massive episode of self-doubt. And of course, I've talked about this before. I've done a video on it on YouTube. It's in my book, The Successful Author Mindset. And I know intellectually that self-doubt is just part of the creative process. It's something that even the most, the authors who are the most far in their careers, who've had every success, still suffer self-doubt. It's just what happens when you create something and you know you're going to put it out there and you worry about what people are going to think and you just think it's a pile of rubbish. And I really had one of those sort of episodes this week after I finished the draft. Towards the end of the draft, I was just like, oh, this is just not good. Oh my goodness. And of course, I started my edits this morning. So I had only had a few days off because I want to get the book to my editor. And my generally now my draft drafts are quite clean. So I started self-editing this morning, and unsurprisingly, I felt with my critical head that actually it's not that bad. And if you do enjoy my arcane thrillers, this is certainly in the same vein as normally. I mean, this is book 10 in the arcane thriller series. Definitely sort of religious edge, globe trotting. This book is going all over the world, sort of looking at where the Spanish Empire was. So I've been learning a lot actually with the book research on this one. I had no idea how far the Spanish Empire got, but really interesting. So yeah, I am into the self-editing phase. I have the cover and will be sorting out the pre-order soon. As someone who does publish wide, I really love doing pre-orders. It just makes me feel happy because I can see the sales coming in before launch, and it just means that everything's ready to go when the book, once I load the book up, the final thing, I just feel really happy and I can move on to the next project. So I'm looking forward to getting all that set up, and I'm also going to try and tick the reader clock, as author ML Buckman says, or basically try and do something every 90-day period for my fiction. And I will have more plans on that once I get this book off to my editor, and then I'll be doing my plan for JF Pen. So, useful stuff. It is clearly webinar season as we move into the final third of the year, and as we look at achieving our writing and publishing and book marketing goals between now and Christmas, I guess, between now and the holiday season when things get a little nuts. So now is the time to ramp up what you're doing. I mean, really, have a look at what you said you would do in January and let's get it moving, me included, actually. So I do have a couple of more webinars. I know I just had one with Nick, which was super fun, and that was on sort of email list building. I have two more coming up. The first one will be a self-publishing sort of 101 webinar with me and Mark Dawson from SPF, and many of you are on Mark's courses already, but if you aren't, or if you want to do a refresher, we are doing a webinar on how to get your first or your next 10 book reviews, and this is a really good webinar full of great information. It is on Thursday, 13th of September at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And if you register, you can get the replay. So go to thecreativepen.com/sept13, S-E-P-T 13, S-E-P-T 13 even. Or 13, whatever you fancy. It will be aimed at authors new to self-publishing or established authors who want to revisit the basics. It's so interesting at the moment. We, in the sort of indie space, there are, people who are new to writing and new to self-publishing, but there are also authors who are very experienced at writing, very experienced in the publishing world, but not in self-publishing. So definitely, this is a sort of I wouldn't say it's a basics webinar actually, because I always learn stuff from Mark. So everyone is welcome. We'll also be doing a live Q&A afterwards, and hopefully no tech gremlins like Nick and I had the other week. So how to get your first or next 10 book reviews, 13th of September 2018 at thecreativepen.com/SEPT13. I've also got another webinar coming up with Tim Grohl on book launches, which I will announce with a link next week. Haven't quite got the link for that ready yet. So that'll be fun. Also, live events. I will be at NINC in Florida in a few weeks' time. I'm starting to look forward to it now, and I'm about to go through my slide packs. I will be doing two sessions. One on 7 ways to grow your book sales internationally, which ties in to today's podcast, and also content marketing for long-term fiction sales, which I'm really glad I'm speaking on because I am looking at what to do with JF Pen, and many of the ideas I'll be talking about are things I have tried or I'm going to try or really, really looking at seriously. I will also be around at the various sociable things, talking of the lovely Mark Dawson, I will probably be at the SPF Drinks, which I think they've announced on their show. And also the, I hear, I haven't been to Nink before, but I hear Draft to Digital do karaoke, which I may or may not be doing my rendition of Bon Jovi's Living on a Prayer with Mark Lefebvre. Mark, if you're listening, you and me. Back on the mic. I think we last did that in Austin. That's pretty much my turn on the mic. And gin helps me extrovert for a limited time before I conk out. So looking forward to Nink, looking forward to learning a lot and networking and perhaps singing. So that'll be fun. So thanks for all your emails and tweets this week and comments. And it was just, there have been so many, far more than usual. In fact, as many as the episode with Michael Brent Collings on writing with depression, which was the other one that got lots and lots of comments. Some really just heartrending comments and thoughts about mums in general. I'm so glad you all enjoyed the interview with my mum. And I have forwarded lots of the, well, not forwarded, I've kept all your personal information secret, but I have sent your comments to my mum. She was really thrilled with the reception, and after being worried about it, I said, you know, welcome to the community. So that's very cool. So just a few of the comments. Bethel Swift said, really enjoyed the episode with your mum. She made such a great point about seeing the world differently as a writer. Loved it. Michelle Steffens says, this was my first Creative Pen podcast that I listened to, and you and your mum stole my heart. My goal is to be as active as Jackie when I'm in my 70s. Love it. And actually, yeah, mum totally has a new lease of life. She's even going to be going on a trip to Kazakhstan or something next year. She's she's super going for it. Book research, obviously. Kristin Ashby says, this is such a fantastic podcast. I listened to it on my evening walk and loved every minute, especially your mum's reflections on starting out and trusting you to guide her. Talk about a proud mum. Aww. Yeah, it was sweet. And then there were a few sad ones about people who miss their mums, like Vanessa Kia, who said, really enjoyed the latest podcast, but it made me miss my mum more than ever. And I'll try not to get teary about it, but part of my reason for kind of getting my mum on the video and the podcast was there are no other recordings of her so far. I might have got her into it, but I, you know, it really is. It's something I kind of did also for posterity, for my own history, I guess. So yeah, very cool. And then there are a few, like Matt's here. Matt Quintana said, love the interview with your mum. You both come off very well. I couldn't imagine having to do something so entangled with my mother. There were quite a few that were phrased along those lines as well. And then finally, A.H. Johnston, who was listening to the podcast on branding while packing for a weekend in Iceland at Reykjavik Viking Museum, which sounds awesome. Iceland is definitely on my list. Haven't been there yet, but definitely will go. Right, today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I will play a word from them in a minute. And of course, if you want to sell more books at Kobo Writing Life, check out the blog post on the blog today, which is how to sell more books at Kobo, which is fun. Thanks also to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. Lots of new patrons this week. Margaret Webster, Catherine Spader, Laura Durham, Terry Ann Varga, Kristen Todd, Megan Kingsley Gale, Sue Palmer, aka the Horse Physio, Tracy Devlin, Phoebe, and Ken McLeod. And thanks to Pamela Chavez for increasing her pledge, and to everyone who supports the show on Patreon. And I know I do announce new patrons every week. What I obviously don't do is mention anyone who has dropped off. And I did want to mention this because I heard someone else mention this on their show, and I thought it was a good thing to say. Obviously, the patrons come in and out, and I absolutely understand when people can't support anymore or they drop off. So all the new patrons are really brilliant because you keep everything topped up and moving forward. So I really do appreciate your support on Patreon. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. And you can support the show with just a few dollars a month or a couple of coffees a month if you want to help my coffee addiction. And you'll get the extra Q&A audio and 3 years of backlist Q&As. So tons of audio fun. If you want to get that, you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Right, here's a word from our sponsor, and then we'll get on with the interview.
Hey Creative Pen listeners, I'm Chrissy, the director of Kobo Writing Life, Kobo's free self-publishing platform created by authors for authors.
And I'm Stephanie, I work on our publisher operations team.
We're just guessing here, but you seem to like podcasts for writers.
Did you know that we also have a podcast for writers?
It is the Kobo Writing Life podcast. We feature interviews with best-selling authors, tips on the craft and business of writing, and advice for successfully self-publishing.
In recent episodes, we talked to BookBub and asked them the number one question everyone wants to know. What are BookBub editors looking for when they choose titles to be featured in their deals emails?
And we interviewed USA Today best-selling author Serena Bowen about running a successful self-publishing business, collaborating with other authors, and the view of romance books in the media.
Most recently, we spoke to Overdrive about what librarians are looking for when buying ebooks.
So check us out.
The Kobo Writing Life Podcast.
Available for download on all major podcast platforms.
Today, I'm here with Kinga Gentetics. Hi, Kinga.
Hi, Joanna. Hi, everyone. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, it's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Kinga is the CEO and co-founder of Publish Drive, which is an ebook publishing platform. She was named as one of the Forbes top 30 entrepreneurs under 30 and one of the top 100 female founders. And in 2017, Google invested in Publish Drive as part of its Launchpad Accelerator program. And Kinga's also from Budapest in Hungary, which is, I think you're the first Hungarian on the show, which my husband's very excited about because he's half Hungarian. So welcome, Hungary.
Thanks. I'm happy to be the first Hungarian.
So just start by telling us a bit more about you and why you decided to get into ebook publishing.
I have a background in working and in business as well. So I don't have a literature background, but I always had love and passion towards literature and music as well. So I was writing short stories, you know, novellas, poetry, and I was playing the violin as well. And when I was a teenager, I realized that I won't be a musician. So I couldn't really feel that I could perform on a stage, you know. But I definitely felt the need that I want to work with creative people, and I wanted to help them strive in their business as well later on. And obviously, I really enjoyed working with musicians later on, because at the university, I actually decided to take a job as a digital marketer in music business. And yeah, it was a working in musicians. So you can imagine that they were getting up late at 3 p.m. But then they were lovely people as well. And they are sometimes, you know, just crazy. At the university, actually, I still had, I was still in between music and literature. And I chose a topic for my master's thesis, which was about how music can influence an image of a country. And that was actually a turning point when I realized that, okay, literature is way much more interesting for me. And I actually published my master's thesis in an ebook format. And that's how the whole Publish Drive idea came to my mind as well, because as a non-technical person, I had no idea what I'm doing. So I really couldn't format an ebook at that point yet. And it was quite a lot of pain for me to publish my book. And I just realized that, okay, it has to be simplified in a way. And when I published my book, finally, I just realized that people were buying it, you know, from the States, from Brazil, from Mexico, from those kind of places, which I never knew that anyone could actually buy a book, especially my book, which wasn't the real book. And obviously, if I have to publish today, it would be totally different. It would be made much better, I hope so. And then I just saw that, okay, there is some need and there is an opportunity here to actually create a platform which simplifies the whole publishing process. And then with our co-founders, we started to work on the idea of PublishDrive. They are actually technical people. So that was a really great mix that we actually could find each other. And we just got friends as well, obviously, during the road. We started PublishDrive. We launched PublishDrive 3 years ago. Publicly, and that was quite a big milestone for us. And yeah, look at us. So now we actually have an American company. Most of our users are coming from the States as well. And we are really happy that we actually can continue developing on the platform and providing more features for our authors.
Wow, that's amazing. And I'm so interested then, because so you did this only a few years ago, and yep. When actually the ebook publishing market was quite developed, actually, like Smashwords is 10 years old, over 10 years old, Drafter Digital, obviously Kobo, Amazon, KDP has been around a yep. long time. So, but you and your team, obviously being from Hungary in Europe, what did you see that you thought you could add differently in an international market? Like, because there were all these US and one Canadian yeah. company. What do you think you guys brought that was different?
Yeah, so especially as we started from Hungary, we had a different mindset. So Hungary has like 10 million people who live here and a few million outside of Hungary, and more are actually moving outside of Hungary. That's another story. But we definitely could see that this is a small market. So if we want to do something, whatever it is, we have to think globally. And that's how we started to build PublishDrive as well. So this is based global thinking is in our DNA. That's why we actually got into partnership with different stores in different markets, like in Romania as well, or obviously in China, or in those kind of markets which were not tapped by other distributors like Smashwords or Drafter Digital as well. And what we could see that there was not a real good solution for authors out there which really provides the transparency what we wanted to build. So if you look at the platform, we show you what kind of royalties you can get at the different stores. We actually have quite a big amount of stores where we included in other markets as well than the big five or six platforms. We built analytics as well, which is quite cool based on our client base. They say that it's really useful for them to see the consolidated data about their sales. So basically, it's a book report, but more advanced because you can see all of the stores what you already have in PublishDrive switched on as well. And basically, that was what we actually wanted to change to bring the global perspective into the whole publishing scene and to bring more transparency as well, because that is what is still missing on the market, I think, in many, many cases.
Yeah, and I also, and when I met you at London Book Fair like a year and a half ago now, it wasn't this year, it was last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I was really impressed. First of all, I'm always impressed by the global first perspective. But also I asked you, and I want to ask you again now, kind of in public, you know, you're millennial, you're, you know, and why, you know, publishing is often filled with a lot of older people doing older things. And I was like, wow, you're a millennial getting into publishing, which just seems kind of odd. So tell me, why are you so excited and so positive about the future of digital specifically that you are in this as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, well, I always like odd and weird things, so maybe this is something what I am attracted to. But in overall, first of all, I was passionate about publishing. So I always loved writing as well. And I love the people who are too. And, you know, I'm not afraid of any kind of changes, or if there is any kind of challenges what we have to face with. And to be honest, I really like problems and I like to solve them. And I think that is the whole idea and the whole attitude of the team as well, that we like problems. So when something is going wrong, and yeah, you can imagine that there are a lot of things which go wrong or which we have to fix. But then we enjoy the road and we really like to actually see the changes, what we could actually achieve with some of the developments, what we did. And the best things are when there are some authors who are writing to our support team, for instance, and they say that how much they love the platform and how much they like us as well. And we actually collect those small quotes. And we always make some, when it's raining outside, for instance, and we are actually talking about these quotes and we are trying to cheer up each other. And in the future, actually, we want to put those quotes on the wall as well in the office to make sure that we remember that that's why we are doing this, to make changes and to help the authors. And even though when we started, there were other like distributors on the market, and yeah, it sounds something with not that usual that there is a millennial who joins the publishing world, but you know, it's more like self-publishing as well what we do, and I think that self-publishing has to shake up the whole industry, and it's still doing it as far as I can see. And I really hope that it will even better in the future in terms of changing the traditional industry standards, which really has to be shaken up a bit.
Mm. And I think we're going to come back to the shake-up, but I want to focus first on some of the partnerships you have. So first of all, mm-hmm. PublishDrive has Google investment, and you, are you in America right now or are you in Hungary?
No, I'm in Hungary, but in 2 weeks, actually, I will be in New York. So
you're back in America.
Yeah. I'm traveling quite a lot. So you never know where you are catching me. But
yeah, you get it. So yeah, you go back and forth to America. And of course, yep. The Google investment's really interesting. And I was attracted to Google Play. And in fact, am primarily, and I'm still, as you know, putting all my books up on PublishDrive to get onto the Google Play platform. Now, many authors want to get involved with Google Play. We've all been so frustrated with it because like 6-7 years ago you could get on direct. They're opening up again now, but they could have done an Amazon, they could have taken this huge chunk of the market. They don't seem to care that much, but their investment in you guys, the fact that you're focusing on them, the Android platform being so huge, Google Home, their investment in audiobooks, it seems like Google Play is going to maybe have a resurgence. So first of all, what are your thoughts on Google Play, and also any tips for selling more books on Google Play?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I definitely can see that the future of Google Play Books it contains a lot of potentials, and I definitely can see that they are not exploiting all of them yet. But as far as I can see, they are trying to make small steps towards easing up this whole publishing journey on Google Play Books as well. Though they are working a bit differently than the other platforms. So usually other platforms are working in agency model, they are working in wholesale, then they actually support other kind of formatting and those kind of stuff. But in what we can see that, especially when it's about emerging markets, like India, for instance, Google Play is very strong in emerging markets. And I think that is one of the things what the authors should know about, that if they want to go and tap into those markets which are not covered by Amazon that much yet, then Google Play is one of the best places to start with. And if you want to actually sell more on Google Play Books, you have to discover and what kind of opportunities there are out for merchandising, for instance, or having more attention by Google Play. we actually had the option to provide Google author pages for some of our published Rive authors. And it was beautiful because obviously if you have a separate author page with Google, then everyone knows the biggest search engine. So you will actually be on the top of the searches when someone is looking up for you, and then they will be directed to your Google Play Books page, which is a very good thing. It's basically a free SEO, search engine optimization, for you. And obviously you have to have your bio there. You have to have a nice picture. But it's really helpful for the authors to market themselves as well. And another thing, what I think most of the authors, they haven't exploited yet. Google Play Books works very well with Google Ads, obviously, Google AdWords, because they are tied up. And Google is actually screening the book. So that's why they have it in their contract as well, that they can improve their other services based on screening the book itself. And it really helps, especially if you are selling or writing nonfiction books, then Google AdWords is really helpful for you. And it really works beautifully with Google Play Books as well. So it means that you have to set your right keywords, but AdWords keyword planner, for instance, it helps you really easily set up those. And actually, we had some small experiments as well with some of the books what we had to market them on Google AdWords and how people are reacting and how we should do that. And we had some good results. And obviously, we are looking forward to having more authors included in those experiments, because that is something what we definitely have to do. But we always take care of that the metadata is in the right shape before we put any marketing on the books, because that is the biggest pitfall what the authors can do, that they are spending a lot of money on advertisement before they are actually shaping up their metadata. So that is one thing what we do before we actually try any kind of experiment on the marketing advertising part.
Okay, fantastic. And on that, I guess the emerging markets is really interesting, because you have pricing in a lot of different currencies. The three main ones, US dollar, GBP, euro, but then you have a lot more, maybe 20, 25 more currencies. So probably if people want to sell more in the emerging markets, they do have to adjust those prices down in the lower price markets like India. Would that be right?
Yes, it can actually work. So we could see that some authors, they were pricing their books down, as you mentioned, and it was working well for them. Obviously, it depends on the book as well. And because in some of the markets, like, for instance, in China, books are selling in different genres as well. And when it's about a different source as well, different kind of genres are selling well too. So that's why it's really important to see whether it is the right fit for your book to be priced down, because in some cases it might work, but in some cases you just lose some money and it doesn't have any kind of result in the end of the day. So but we are happy to advise some of our artists as well. If you are writing us a support email as well, we are happy to advise you whether it's the best way to do your marketing for the different markets.
Mm. And then what about audiobooks for Google Play? Because they've introduced that this year, and PublishDrive just does ebooks at the moment. But what are your thoughts on audiobooks? Is that something you guys might get into?
Yeah, we are definitely interested in audiobooks. So we already had a chat with Google as well, how we can sell audiobooks there. We actually have some audiobooks already sold on Overdrive, but it's not public yet. So it's definitely just what we are testing out to see how it works. Because the whole audiobook market works a bit differently than the ebooks so far, because they have standards, or they, in some cases, they don't have that much standards yet. That's why we want to make sure that the quality assurance process what we have in place for ebooks is the same quality what we actually will have for the audiobooks as well. But we are working on that to make sure that we actually can help our authors to sell audiobooks as well, especially on Google Play or on other markets, because there are already some other stores as well, not just Audible, which is obviously the biggest one when it's about audiobooks. But it's already quite fragmented when it's about selling audiobooks.
Yeah, I agree. And I also, as you say, I think ahead and I'm thinking to these emerging markets, which are going to be huge digitally in the next 5 to 10 years as yeah. the internet continues. And I think we're going to see, and Android is such a big platform in many of those countries. So I'm very keen to get into that in the future. So very exciting. So let's talk about Dang Dang, which you Published Drive have recently announced a partnership. So mentioned that it's often called the Chinese Amazon. So everyone's like, oh yeah, I'd love to get into China. But of course, what does that mean? Because, you know, what does the Chinese ebook market look like? And most authors, well, authors listening will be writing in English. So yes. what is the potential for English books in China?
Yeah, so first of all, we already had one Chinese partner before. But they were selling only digital to digital libraries. So it's a different kind of business model. We already could sell books there too. So we could see that digital libraries in China, they were buying English language books. So that was already something what we could test out, whether it's a good market for us to tap into mm-hmm. results. So that's why we actually wanted to close the deal with Dang Dang. And we are really happy that finally we could do that. The Chinese book market is especially different than the other Western book markets because it's governed by the government, actually, and there is a censorship as well. So that's why it's a bit slower to publish in China because there is a censorship process. So they are screening all the content. And the tricky part is that they didn't really share what kind of guidelines we have to follow. So we don't exactly know what they are not looking for or what they are doing. But obviously, we see whether there is a book rejected or not. So we are building up our own processes for that as well. So far, we had quite good results. So there were not really books which were rejected by them. But this is something what authors should know, that it is a slower process to get your books into the Chinese stores. On the other hand, when it's about China, obviously it's an emerging market. It means that there are other players there than Amazon, which is a good thing as well for the authors who want to go wide and who want to be more independent, because Amazon is a wonderful partner to work with. And obviously it's very important to have a good partnership with Amazon. But there is a world outside there as well. And for authors, it's really good to actually have more options for selling books. And the other thing is that in China, different genres are selling well. So as it is an emerging market, especially nonfiction type of books, science, social sciences or STM or self-help books, they are selling quite well. And even in our database, we could see that English language learning type of books were actually selling quite good. So if you are writing any kind of English language learning books, then this is one of the best markets to tap into at this point. And when it's about the Chinese market, there are like 1.4 billion people there. And it's huge, amazingly huge. And the statistics actually show that 800 million of them are reading, which is 800 million. So it's amazing. Very, very huge. And about 400 million who actually are learning English too. Mm-hmm. So it's a bigger market than the US itself, imagine. So obviously English language books should have been sold there as well. And we could see on our own database that we already sold many books there too in English. And I think that is a very good sign for authors who are writing in English to sell in other markets as well than English language markets, because China is open for Western titles. If you look at the top best-selling titles as well in China, most of them are actually translated from US or from Japanese titles. So this already shows that they are hungry for a Western culture type of content. And I think if there is an author who has an ambition to sell their rights later on to China, then this is one of the best ways they can do if they are already starting to sell their English language book in China and they might get the attention of other publishers in China. And obviously, publishing in China, especially from a publisher's perspective, it's a bit different as well because there are like 580 publishing companies who were owned by the government before. So this is a bit different market. It's not that liberated that other markets, but still they are publishing tremendous amount of books because obviously they have a lot of people who they can sell to.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, it's as you say. I mean, people often think, oh, yeah, the Chinese market's so big, but then they think, oh, no one speaks English. But even if it's a tiny percentage of that 1.4 billion or whatever, it's actually a lot of people speaking English.
Yeah,
exactly. And I say this about India. Yeah. I say this about India as well. And these, you know, Nigeria, these, you know, these huge countries with growing economies where, you know, a lot of people want to read more English books, especially self-help, as you say. So that's very exciting. So then this year at London Book Fair, China Literature were there, who are obviously, I think they're owned by Tencent, again, one of the big like the Chinese Google or whatever. And I know you're fascinated with AI tools as well. I know you're very into that. Now, my thought is, okay, that China Literature coming to the English market, they're starting to translate. But I really think that we're not even going to need the translation with the future of AI translation. Now, obviously, you know, as you speak multiple languages and you're involved with Google, who do a lot of AI, what do you think about the future for AI in terms of this translation or in terms of AI around publishing, I guess, and discovery?
Yeah. So AI is already in the publishing industry. So that's very interesting to see how people and companies are trying to utilize the power of AI in the industry. I'm sure that you have heard that there are some AI algorithms which are trying to write books. So this is something which is insane. Imagine that there shouldn't be any writers anymore, but obviously this is not the case, I think. There was one case where there was an AI which tried to continue the Game of Thrones. I'm not sure whether you have heard about that. they actually were very good at mimicking the style of Martin, but obviously they couldn't actually get all the tricks and all the plays what he had in his mind. But it was quite good in terms of inventing and showing that the AI is actually able to invent some small jokes or some small rhymes as well. So this is already getting there to actually support authors in their creative writing processes. And I see that kind of AI more like as a support for the authors, not like replacing the authors themselves in the creative writing process. And I think that's the future of AI when it's about how to write books. On the other hand, when it's about translation, well, I think it's a very big, very big and tricky part of the whole industry because AI is still in infancy phase. And obviously, when it's about translation, then it's even in an earlier stage, because you can see that how Google Translate works, for instance. You can see it's not the best tool in many cases. But the funny thing is that we had some authors who were trying to sell their books with AI translated methods. Well, obviously they failed on our book review process, thank God. But but this actually shows that there is a need for that for the authors. So I really hope that we actually can move into the direction where there will be some tools which support the authors and the translators as well in their work processes when it's about writing or writing books as well. And when it's about the discovery part, AI is really helpful. We actually already use AI for content review in our platform and for improving the metadata as well, because that is something what really needs to be done as well for many books. Because if you don't categorize your book in the right place, for instance, then you might get not the best results what you are hoping for. And for the content review, we flag most of the content which might contain inappropriate content, for instance. And for the metadata improvement, we have only in-house tools, and hopefully we will release some news in the next couple of weeks where authors can use some of the AI-supported metadata improvement tools as well. But obviously, this is something what everyone tries to do on the retailer side as well. So when it's about Google, for instance, they are screening the books. They are using their algorithm to make sure that they can provide the best content for the readers, which are similar books in their understanding. And they can suggest and recommend those titles too. And obviously, Amazon does the same. And they are even trying to help how to price your books in some cases as well. So I'm sure that this is one of the most powerful part of AI, how to support the metadata and how to improve that to make sure that the recommendations engines are actually working in the fullest of the retailers.
Yeah, I always think that we're in such a beginning level with this discoverability stuff. I mean, the fact that we still have to type in keywords, pick keywords, when to me, the book itself is metadata. And as soon as we get, as soon as we get natural language processing, which I know Google is working on, Amazon's working on, the AI should be able to read the book and know the tone and pick the keywords. I shouldn't have to, it's such a blunt instrument, isn't it? Picking seven words and or seven keyword phrases that somehow encapsulate your book.
Yeah, actually, for many retailers, they don't need actually the metadata, the keywords, for instance, because they say, well, we have actually AI, so we are already using that to make sure that we have the right keywords. So this is one thing, but as we can see, for instance, at Amazon, they are using the keywords, and actually it's the author's interest to put all the keywords there, especially if they are targeting a specific category, for instance.
Yeah, interesting. Now, you've talked about this review process that you have. Yeah. And as I've been publishing, I know that your team have like checked them and everything. Yeah. And I'm like, yay, it's gone through. And that's really good. But I'm wondering, because you guys see so many books, what are the top things that you see that authors are getting wrong in terms, or the things that make you go, oh, that book's not going to sell, or, you know, what are the issues that authors are still missing out, I guess?
Yeah, if they don't have a compelling cover. So that is something what we always see, that, okay, this has to be somehow improved, or they just simply use 3D covers, for instance. What we say, okay, please don't do that. It's an ebook. So it would be very misleading for the end users to have a 3D cover, which shows like it's a print book. So that is something what we always try to advise not to do. The other thing is in the metadata, especially if they are putting everything in the title. Many authors, they believe that all the engines, the search engines, will find their books much easier and much better if they put everything in the title, not in the subtitle part or in other parts of the metadata. And yeah, this was something where we had to explain every time to the authors that please don't do that. Don't put the subtitle in the title itself, because it can be misleading for the authors, for the readers, because they don't really understand, okay, what's going on. And it's not the best interest in the authors either. And the third part, which is the biggest mistake they can make as well, is if they don't put enough effort into their description. And if they are missing out putting their best reviews, for instance, in the description, because we can see that just by updating your description every few months with the best reviews you got, that can actually really help to increase your sales as well, because especially if you put in the first two rows what actually shows in all of the retail stores as well, because it is something fresh for the author, for the readers to see, and it actually provides feedback about your book as well if you put your most recent review there. And I think this is something what every author should do to update their description bi-monthly or monthly as they can feel, with some recent reviews or with some good content, what they feel they would actually help them to sell more.
Wow, I haven't heard that before. Mainly, I think, because Amazon says you can't put reviews in the description. You have to put it in your editorial section, which is below the description. So do you mean that for all the other retailers, not Amazon?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Ah, interesting. See, and this is the mindset I think so important is most people design their whole publishing experience around what Amazon wants. And it's so interesting to start thinking outside that. So I do want to come back on the covers. This is an issue I've had for a long time with the publishing systems, and yours is the same in that you publish it once and it goes to all countries. But what we've seen is there are very different cover design ideas of a cover that is attractive to an English person can be very different to a cover design that works in the Philippines or Asia. Asia has some quite different looking covers. American covers, again, quite different. And in China, for example, around any kind of romance or, you know, I imagine that's difficult. Yeah. So what are your thoughts on global covers? Like, how do we design for a global market?
Yeah, that's actually a very good point, to adjust your content for the local market needs, not just with pricing, for instance, but with the content itself. And I think you can actually do that in Publish Drive as well by uploading a new version of your book. So that is something what authors said. If they actually have a new cover, then it's a new type of book already. I definitely can suggest to all the authors to try to adjust their books for the different markets if they have the resources to do that. Mm. Because this is something which might help to sell even more in the different markets. But in some cases, it might be an overload based on how much work you have to actually put into that. Mm-hmm. And based on how much return you might get. So you really have to see which content you are putting this effort. And you actually can make some small experiments and see what's working on the different markets and what's not. And then to build this knowledge into your next book. Because I think, especially when you think about the whole lifetime of a book, when you release a new book, it's actually getting more attention, obviously. And that's the part when you can see whether that knowledge, what you actually got before from your experiment, is actually working or not.
Yeah, I agree that doing different covers per market is a lot of work. I just again, thinking forwards into a time where we actually have much more developed markets, I can see that, you know, you might not want to do one for everywhere, but, you know, certainly I, you know, sub-Saharan Africa is quite a different market to, say, Eastern Europe. So, you know, you might really have different covers. So that, to me, that's, again, a 5-10 year thing. As to, but I like, you know, I know you and I like to think ahead.
Oh, yeah, sure. And, you know, just to, I was already thinking with that as well. Well, to, you know, to make special theaters by country, that can be very good, actually, and quite easy to scale as well, because we know that in different countries, the colors are working different way as well. So, for instance, in France, the masculine type of colors are red and black. Meanwhile, for instance, in Hungary, red is more like a feminine type of color. So if you know these kind of differences with filters, it can be changed quite easily. Well, that's a very good idea. We might start to work on that.
Oh, yay. Well, I mean, I see it very much. You know, you and I both travel a lot, and I see it very much with English covers are often very muted. You know, that everything's dialed down, whereas colors in Asia, like you look at a book cover in India or, you know, anywhere in Asia, it's much, much brighter, much, you know, bolder. So I'm glad you're interested in that. Well, before we go, because we're almost out of time. So if people are now interested in Publish Drive, they're thinking, oh, but, you know, well, what's the real difference? So can you just maybe give people an idea of Publish Drive and what sets it apart, or what is different to the other distributors out there?
Yeah, sure. So what I could see that we have five main differentiators from the other service providers. We have the most stores with the best royalties. So you can look at our page where we list all the stores where we go and all the royalties, what you can get. Everything is transparent there. So you can look at, for instance, at the Google Play royalties as well, what you can get. I think it's the best on the market right now. And we actually have an earn-as-you-sell model, which means that we will actually pay you out anyhow, whether we receive the money from the retailers or not. So this is the risk what the others actually are not taking in many cases. And we believe that this is the way how business should be done, in our case at least. Then we have, as I mentioned before, we have this high-quality book review process, what is really important for us. We actually had many authors switching to our platform from other service providers, and we actively help them to improve their formatting or their metadata, because we believe that this has to be done in order to make sure that they can be published in the best way to the different stores. And they were really happy about that, because authors, they want to actually improve themselves and they want to learn. And obviously, we built a lot of automated processes in the book review process as well. But in the end of the day, there is a human eye which looks at a book as well, just to make sure that we can put some extra knowledge and extra AI there, human intelligence there. Then what we got as a feedback from our authors, that they really like the cutting edge and analytics dashboard what we have about the sales data. Basically, in a few dashboards, you can see all of your sales from the different countries, from the different stores as well, in a consolidated way as well. But you can filter based on everything you want to see. So whether you want to filter on a country or on a store, you can do that quite easily. And we even provide that for many stores in a real-time way as well. So in a few days delay, you might able to see all the sales, what you actually got from the different stores, which really helps you to react much faster on your marketing efforts, for instance. So if you have a campaign which is active, then you can see whether it's working or not, and you can iterate on that, which is I think, really important for the authors. And what we call it is basically a book report for in an advanced way, really, because it shows you everything. And then what we could see that our authors really like is how we interact them throughout our support team. They really like that we are approachable and we really help to solve their problems as well. So as I mentioned before, our team is full of problem solvers. So we really like to help the authors, not just to answer something that, okay, yes, we are working on it, let's see, but to actually solve the problems. And I think based on the quotes, what we had so far, it's working quite well. And I really hope that there will be more and more authors who can actually get the help of our support team too. And the fifth and the last biggest differentiator is that we actually worked very hard to provide extra merchandising and marketing opportunities for the retail stores. So now we have this opportunity for Amazon, for Apple, for Scribd, for Overdrive, for Kobo. So for many stores, we want to make sure that the artists can utilize all the tools what the source actually can provide, and to make sure that the content can be featured in their marketing calendar or in the front page of the source as well. A few weeks ago, we actually had one book featured on the iBooks US store in the romance section. So obviously, it's quite a sight to get in, especially during summertime. But then the author, she actually could get 5 times more sales in the end of the day during this period where she was selling, and she was actually featured on the front page in this section. So obviously it works a lot if you can utilize and you can use this kind of advanced marketing features what we provide with PublishDrive.
Fantastic. And as I said up front, I'm using PublishDrive now, and really I'm very positive about the future, I think, because you and I connected, and I think we're excited about many of the same things. So yeah. And sometimes some of the distributors can be quite faceless, and you know, it can be hard to connect. So I'm very excited about what your team are doing, and the global first perspective is awesome. So just give people the website where they can go and check it out.
Yeah, it's publishdrive.com. So you can find it quite easily. We have a very active blog there. So if you are looking for some tips or for some content about publishing, then you might find a lot of interesting articles there. We actually have a Facebook page, a Twitter page, and an Instagram page as well. But besides that, we started to build our author group on Facebook. It's an author community. It's called Your Self-Publishing Story. And it's growing quite well. It's very, very good to see that they are engaging with each other and they are helping each other. And I love to see that how committed they are to the books of the others as well.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Kinga. That was great.
Thanks a lot. And thanks for inviting me again to the show.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Kinga today. I'm really looking forward to sort of increasing what I do on PublishDrive and Google Play. And as Jeff Bezos likes to say, it's always day one. And as I mentioned before, I think it really is day one with the indie movement. Things change, but we are nimble and we can take advantage of the markets as things grow and opportunities move forward. So fun times indeed. And if you're ever getting a bit, you know, vertigo from how fast things change, don't you worry. I'm intending to stay here and we'll keep telling you what's going on. So hopefully that is helpful. So next week, I'm talking to Tim Grohl about author mindset, fighting and winning creative battles, and book launch tips based on his experience with his latest book, Running Down a Dream, which is a frank and at times brutally honest account of his own struggles. And I've got a lot of highlights in that book. Really interesting. So we'll be talking about that. And of course, remember to join me and Mark Dawson for How to Get Your First or Your Next 10 Book Reviews, Thursday, 13th of September, 2018 at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. Or if you register, you can get the replay at thecreativepen.com/SEPT13. So have a wonderful writing week and I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.